Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring. It's going to be good. If you enjoy this stuff and want to help keep me alive and afloat, go to richherring.com/gigs and see if I am playing in your area anytime soon. I'm doing a big tour of a best-of show called Richard Herring, The Best, and that will be running from September right through to June 2017, coming to most places, so, you know, have a look at that gig guide and see if I'm coming to be near you, and then come and see me if you like. It's better than this podcast because it's not just made up as it goes along. It's proper stuff that I've thought hard about. Anyway, now let's go back to the rubbish made up podcast and see how we went this week. Hope you enjoy it. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, hello. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's been waiting a whole week to find out what happened in that Croydon school-based version of Waiting for Godot for real. It's Richard Herring! Hello! Oh, you're much better than last week's audience. So welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre. It'll come to a point where just the whole thing, I can do a whole episode of this and it'll just all be catchphrases all the way through and then it'll just end. That's what I'm aiming for. No guests required. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was in Biker Grove the other day. I don't know if you know, it's they got like a youth centre up there, and PJ and Duncan, a couple of the lads there, were doing a rap about it was about podcasts, and they in that rap they called it Rehlastipper, and Spuggy didn't know, she wouldn't. She said no, it's Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. She's 38 years old now, so. If you know what happened to Spuggy, do let me know. So I'm doing observational comedy about a thing that most of you were not born. Apart from like David Frew, he was. Did you watch Biker Grove, David?
No.
Well, it would have been weird, because you know, you'd have been... I watched it, and I was too old to watch it. So if you'd watched it, it would have been doubly bad. Let's just get David Frew on here, just so you can see the kind of man we're talking about. Should have... If I... David, if I... And it's not going. We'll cut that bit out so it looks good. Oh, for fuck's sake, work! There, it's working now. Just edit that bit out. So, Dave's eating minstrels. If I had to guess what year you were born in, I would say 1961.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? That's David. Yeah, I could. This is a little, thing I can do. It's a little trick I've got. So I thought this week, it's back in history for you at home, but everyone was resigning this week, so I thought I might resign from Rich Chain's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, let someone else take over. But I don't know really who could do it. Would you be up for it doing it, David? Do you think you could do as good a job as me?
No.
No. You prefer just to sit there and eat minstrels? Have you been sharing any minstrels? No. Is that a hole? That's a big pack of minstrels. You're not worried at your age that, you know, eating all that chocolate, what, the arteries and things?
No, I've done lots of yoga.
Have you? Someone likes yoga. So it's... You do your own. You are a good-looking man. You know, if it wasn't for your face and everything, you would know your old man face. I'm just horrible, aren't I? you're perhaps... Oh, at least I've made someone laugh. It is myself. I'm going to. It's terrible. Everyone's gone, isn't it? There's no one ruling anything. The Prime Minister's gone. The Leader of the Opposition has surely gone by now. Jeremy Clarkson's gone, you know, and his replacement, the bloke who gets his cock out and puts it on people's shoulders. That's not my words. That is the words of Bob Mortimer on this very podcast. We should have known, really, it was coming. That's just what they do, isn't it, DJs? But anyone who's presented Top of the Pops, that's allowed, isn't it? You're allowed to put your cock on someone's shoulder. That is, yeah? Yeah, that woman says it's all right. And that is a consent, if only I'd got it on video. So that would be safe. Anyway, look, I'm going to crack straight on, and because... I'm really sorry, David. I'll buy you... If you come next week... There'll be a free pack of minstrels there for you. You're a very good-looking man. I was just flirting. So will you please welcome a man who's probably best known for being in the 1979 series Chopper Squad, which was a year before he was born. It's an Australian TV series I think Reg Grundy produced. So I'm very interested to find out more about that. It's Matthew Crosby, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is, Matthew Crosby from Chopper Squad. Hello. It's from Chopper Squad.
Hello, fans.
Hello, there we go. Tell me about the 1979 of Australian TV show Chopper Squad.
Well, I thought you might mention this, Richard. I've got no idea about the... I can only imagine there's another famous Matthew Crosby. A famous Matthew Crosby.
From Chopper Squad.
Chopper Squad. Yeah. I don't remember it. Was the chopper a BMX bike? I'm hoping. Fingers crossed.
I'm not sure, but the only bit of trivia I saw about it was that it possibly influenced Baywatch and was the thing that on Australian TV. So I imagine it was about...
Helicopters,
people.
Helicopter rescue.
Yeah.
People drowning.
Someone saw that and said, let's get rid of the helicopters.
Yeah. And replace it with fake boobs. Yeah. And that's, yeah. That's,
let's
yeah,
play, it replace works. It with David Hasselhoff's chopper. That could be what they thought. So let's... That was a joke one. You're probably best known...
Yes.
...for appearing in a children's version of Wayne Fagotto.
That's right.
That's what...
Well, you said it was like a children's... It wasn't for children. I was sort of basically a child. Yeah. I was... that was when I was in sixth form, and Nish was... he was in year
Nish
seven.
Nish Kumar from last year.
Nish Kumar from...
Some of the people won't have seen that here.
Oh, yeah. So for those of you who didn't come along to both, thanks to those diehard fans who stuck it out for both. I was at the same school, St Olav's, in Orpington, not Croydon.
Okay.
Sorry to pick you up. Nish comes from Croydon. That's why the mistake was made. But yeah, I went. I went to school in Orpington, and we did a production of Waiting for Godot.
Yeah.
And I listened to the last week's episode.
Oh, yeah,
it's a cracking episode. It's really, really enjoyed it. You said, "Oh, did he play Godot?"
Yeah.
I didn't. I played Vladimir. But this is how the teacher who directed the production was nuts and danced on at the end in a Union Jack bowler hat, holding a sign saying, "I'm Godot." which he hadn't told us he was going to do. It was absolutely, it was insane. Why would you do, that's kind of the point, like, he was our English teacher as well. He was helping us achieve A-level English, A, if you're asking. Let's not talk about the other two, the theology and the history I did. But yeah, he was teaching us. He was an awful teacher. I won't name him to shame him, because I think he was having a lot of like troubles. But he one day he came into class. And he was like, "Okay, we're doing the importance of being earnest. I'm going to teach you from this book." And it was like one of those Cliff Notes books, and they'd spelt earnest the wrong way on the front of the book. Yeah. They'd spelt it like the name, whereas it's the you know.
Being earnest.
It's like being earnest, serious. Exactly. Being serious, exactly.
Yeah.
So, is it any wonder that with that education, I cannot draw a crowd when I come and do your podcast?
You've done all right.
I blame him.
Done all right for St. Olaf. We're getting some people who come from St. Olaf's. They might have. Hello. They've come again. They loved it so much.
Yeah, enjoyed it so much. But I don't think we were. You're much younger than me, is that right?
Yeah, I left about 10 years ago.
You left about 10 years ago. Not changing the story. Good call. Had the entire break, do a bit of research, think, when exactly was it? No, about 10 years ago, fair enough. Sounds like about a decade.
I'm also very interested to have you on because you were the programme associate.
I'm associated with that programme, yes.
Of Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson.
Correct.
And I'm hoping to get the whole team together in one podcast one day. Well, which will be a double length one, I think, because there's a lot of people involved.
It's got to be, yeah.
So
who? Because you put a sort of call out on Twitter.
I did.
A few days ago.
Well, obviously, Mark Watson.
Yes.
Wouldn't be Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson, without My Dear Mark Watson.
Right.
When you're the programme associate on this, was there at any point during the work you went, why are we saying Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson? Why don't we just call it Improvisation, My... Well, let's think of another name.
Let's break it down. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So first of all, it was originally... Now, it was my friend Lee was making this show, which makes it sound like the least professional thing. My mate Lee did it. But my friend Lee was making this show, and he liked calling TV shows silly names. Like he was very into sort of what can I get away with in terms of silly names. He did the Robert's Web. Do you remember Robert's Web? He wanted to call it Worldwide Roberts, which I think is very funny.
It is funny.
And he took it to the channel. I can't remember. It was maybe Channel 4. It must have been Channel 4, yeah. And they were like, we don't get it. It's like, oh, that's a shame, because that's much funnier than Robert's Web. And with this, he wanted to call it Improvisation, My Dear Watson. And then he again took it to the channel, which this time was it Dave? Do you know the channel this time?
I think it was...
I mean, I'm only vaguely associated to this programme. And they said, well, people won't know who the Watson is in this, so we've got to call it My Dear Mark Watson. He was like, all right. Why the fuck not? My Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson.
Yeah.
But I think you think he doesn't know what a dumb title it is. And it clearly, we were howling. Couldn't believe, you know, this was... I couldn't believe that they went, yep, that's better. You know this thing that we don't like? You've made it much worse, but we like it more. That was what happened. But yeah, so I was...
Do you have any good memories of the days working as a... When you say programme associate...
Programme associate is a job I do quite a lot, which is basically, it's when they don't want to admit that they're using writers, they call you the programme associate.
Yeah. And with Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson, they have to pretend.
They have to pretend there are no writers. But I wasn't writing, I was trying to devise games. And what that meant was I would go on the website for... shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Go on the Wikipedia page. It's very much how you do your podcast.
Yeah.
Just start with Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I'd go on the Wikipedia page for shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway? And we would pick games they didn't play all that often.
Yeah.
And then you would try and add in a cool new thing like Facebook. So, you'd take sort of two-headed expert, except... He owned a MySpace page, guys, and that was what the story was. So they wanted to make it sort of funky, trendy. They also had it was all done in front of a green screen, because I wasn't there on the night when they recorded it, nor did I watch it when it was finished. But I've heard, possibly from you on this podcast, that they did it all on a green screen, and they were just like, so if for example, Robin Ince was playing the trumpet. Robin did the non-TX pilot.
Yeah, Robin wasn't in it.
No, he.
I don't know if we can have him.
You can't have him.
I don't know if we can, when we're bringing back improvisation, my dear Watson.
Could you please do
Mark
two?
Mark Watson with Justin Lee Collins, grab getting everyone together, yeah. First of all. Then I don't think Robin can come.
Could you not do, just for the people who bought the badges,
yeah.
a special one-off about the non-TX version, the non-transmitted pilot version that didn't get shown? Could you do that as well?
Well, yeah, okay. I think that people will want that much in-depth about this. Do you feel...
From a man who plays snooker against himself. Come on, mate.
Do you think we've maybe done more about this programme now in this conversation than
anyone wants?
Than
definitely.
Anyone would want here, yeah.
Fuck so these guys. This is for us.
It is for us.
They would sort of put in like funny things around it. If they weren't saying a funny thing, they'd be wearing a funny cartoon hat all the way through it.
It's a shame we only got one episode.
It was a shame. Yeah. It was a good premise. It was a good title. It was some good writers behind it. And it would have been nice to get a bit more work out of it, but there you go. That's showbiz, isn't it?
It is. So, talking of researching people on Wikipedia...
Yes.
I researched you on Wikipedia.
Yes.
And it said that... I can't find the bit, but I can remember it from my mind. Oh, yes, you were in the... It says on Wikipedia that you were in the BBC New Act of the year 2005, and you got to the semi-finals, where you were beaten by Aqua. And there's no citation needed on that, so I'm assuming that you were beaten by the band who sang.
I had a very good 5 minutes, but it wasn't as good as Barbie Girl. And well, actually, what happened was they did Barbie Girl in the quarters. In the semis, they did Dr. Jones. Red A was a very funny man and a joy to work with. Now, I think what's happened there is, occasionally, and this happens to a lot of people, people go on your Wikipedia page and just write things that aren't true. There was one a few years ago. My friend Helen Saltzman, who I used to live with, who does another really fun podcast, Answer Me This, she started getting people to do it, put stuff... She put real facts about me, then get other people to put... so, for example, when she said he only wears white socks, that was true. I used to only wear white socks. Okay. I used to just bulk buy white socks. I didn't have to think too much about what socks I was going to wear.
How much time did that save?
Well, I don't know. Do you know what? I genuinely, it was. It's from the movie. It's from the movie The Fly when he talks about Albert Einstein. This is what a pretentious dick I was. But like, I was watching a guy build a time machine in this film and going, yeah, I'm probably wasting a lot of time thinking about what I'm wearing. So I bought just a bunch of pairs of Farrah slacks.
Yeah.
I bought a pair of Campers. I bought loads of Primark plaid shirts and loads of white socks and underwear, and thought, that's it, now I'm going to become Einstein. And just 3 years later, I was a program associate on improvisation, my dear Mark Watson. People used to put weird stuff up. One of them was like, he's scared of Alton Towers, and this was before, you know, so. But if you want to put... There's nothing on my...
Yeah.
Like, my Wikipedia page, the only reason I know what's on it is because I did a gig the other day, and the... sometimes when you do a gig, and there's not much about you on the internet, they just take the first paragraph of the Wikipedia. So it's just like, he was born in Bromley, he did a gig in 2006, come and see him on Thursday. Like, that's all it said. So if anyone wants to update my Wikipedia page with either real or imagined facts, just please go for it, fill your boots.
They could say, I like to research the childhood of my guests.
Okay, I can tell you about my childhood.
Well, yeah, well, I like to be able to surprise you with some facts about the town that you grew up in, but it doesn't say you were born in Bromley, so...
Does it not?
No, so that's a useful thing to add in now.
There we go.
For interviewers of the future, what was it like growing up in Bromley? Did you go to... Hang on, I'll just edit something in. The famous attraction there.
Yeah, every... I remember when it was called...
The
of course, you know.
You could do this as a game in the next series of improvisation.
Mark Watson, yeah. But it would have to be about Snapchat now, you realise, okay. Unfortunately. I still live in Bromley. Mm. I grew up in Bromley, I still live there. It's very nice. It was pretty much a 50-50 split, leave-remain.
Was it, yeah.
But just on the right side.
Okay.
go home, Nish. but yeah, it's fine. It's where David Bowie comes from. I used to work at the MVC in Market Square, which is the Market Square that he talks about in the song 5 Years, you know, moving through Market Square. So that's the biggest claim to fame I've got. Is that but yeah, it's nice, you know. It's the largest of the 32 London boroughs. But no one really people think of it as Kent. Yeah. But it's not. It's it was declassified as Kent before I was born, but yet still when I wrote my address as a child, my parents just sort of, you know, I guess they just, you know, they were around in the 70s. I wasn't. They remember the heady days of the Chopper Gang. Chopper Squad. I apologise, I wasn't there, like I say. Wasn't around. But yeah, they would write Kent in my address, and so I just, you know, just did it.
Yeah.
But now eventually everyone's going to stop, and then I will stop. But now, yeah, now I live in sort of Elmer's End, Anley, Penge, kind of that kind of area. Absolutely. Whereabouts do you live?
Near Penge West.
Near Penge.
Anley and Penge West.
Do you live do you live on Anley Park? Trenholm. Oh,
this is the kind of thing I'd be doing if it said that on the. It's exactly what I'd be doing.
Hang on. Key question. Do you own or do you rent?
I own.
Do you? When did you buy? You must have bought.
3 years.
Oh, you absolute jammy bastard. Yeah, well done. I got priced out the area I bought a year ago, and I'm in fucking Elmer's End. Oh, well. Anyway, why can't I fill a room? The question always pops up whenever I'm doing. I'm doing gold. I'll entertain one person at a time. That's what I do. And entertain is a strong word for what that just was.
Who did beat you in the BBC New Act semi-final? Did you get through?
I think it was John Luke Roberts.
Okay.
I think there were two heats. It was on the Wibbly Wobbly Boat. No, it was on the Tatchell Castle.
Oh yeah.
And it was there were two heats that night, and it was Joe Wilkinson and John Luke Roberts. So both amazing, amazing acts.
Yeah.
Although at the
no aqua though, are they?
No aqua. What are they still? Are they still an ongoing proposition? I hope so.
I would have thought so.
They were very good.
Yeah, they've got those two songs and keep them going. You never hear enough of those two songs, and probably a third one they did that's not as famous.
Well, we can look it up later. Yeah. But I loved Dr. Jones.
Yeah,
because the thing, you know, they were kind of like rednecks.
Yes, except I was the rednecks was very much my go-to. You, Cotton Eye Joe, and then
Poppin' Old Oak, yeah.
And Picking a Pope, wasn't it?
No, Poppin' Old Oak came away.
Poppin' Old Oak.
It's basically Cotton Eye Joe, but about an old man smoking a pipe up a tree. Oh, man! Not a man who had cotton for eyes. Know your audience, rednecks. But they did Barbie Girl, and then they picked another huge franchise, the Indiana Jones movies, for Dr. Jones. They just, presumably, you know, they did another one about Spider-Man that no one really picked up on. Hard to reboot Spider-Man.
So you're on Dirty Britcom Confessions. Have you seen there's quite a lot of you on Dirty Britcom?
Is there?
Yeah, I'm a surprising amount.
No, I look at that quite a lot, but I look to see my, like, again, my friend Josh Widdicombe, because they're the least, like, it's always like, I want to kiss him and drink a cup of tea and stroke his hair. And then it's like Frankie Boyle, I want him to hate fuck me. And it's like, you can really tell the kind of comedian you are by what, so let's find out.
Yeah, well, there's most of them are of the Josh Widdicombe variety.
Okay, fair enough.
Not that, literally, there might be in a couple. I want to strip every piece of clothing off of Matthew Crosby except his glasses and ride him until they fog up.
Yes, please. Yeah. ride him until they fog up.
Yeah. I can get that bit in a way, but I think the taking your clothes off bit by bit, I think...
Why not? Just, bit by bit?
Well,
fold them up?
Yeah,
pop them on the armchair next to...
I think when we get there and you're just...
I mean, it's easy. I wear poppers, so it'd be easy to get the shirt off. But so they say every item.
Every item.
They don't specify.
You will have nothing.
Identical Farrah slacks. His two white socks.
You'll have everything on except your. You have everything off apart from your glasses, which will remain. We'll fog up. Have you ever worn your glasses during intercourse? And have they ever fogged up during intercourse?
No and yes.
Okay.
I was not partaking in the intercourse they fogged up during. No, I don't. It's because it's hard to. Do you ever wear glasses?
Well, I have reading glasses now, but I don't wear them.
But yeah, it's you're never so aroused by the book you're reading that you leap on top of Katie.
No,
it's hard to kiss with glasses on. Yeah. I think it's hard to really kiss like I do it. That's tricky.
Would you be up for someone taking your clothes off and having riding you? And I mean, that could be just like on your back.
It could just be. could just be horsey time, couldn't it? Yeah. No, I'm up for it, but it would have to be my beautiful wife.
Okay. Surely your wife can make an exception for people who put things on Dirty Britcom Confessions. Or what kind of marriage is that?
No, she definitely wouldn't. She absolutely definitely wouldn't.
Well,
that would not
she's
be.
Very. That is very. That's a very strict interpretation of the marriage vows.
She's old fashioned.
Matthew Crosby is the hottest ex-teacher ever.
Damning with faint praise there, isn't it?
I want to role play with him being a teacher and me being a naughty student. I thought we could do that now.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, okay. Fuck off!
Oh, God. Right,
you're
no.
Shit.
Dean, I will call your mother, all right? I'll get her on the phone right now.
Don't care. Fuck you.
Okay, that seems fair. I'm probably going to leave. I was a very ineffectual teacher. Yeah. So there was nothing commanding about me at all as a teacher. I was 22 when I was a teacher.
Wow.
At one point, like the reason I quit to do comedy, in fact, it was around the same time as doing the competitions. I thought, well, that's enough of an in. You know, I'm getting to the semi-finals of competitions. I may as well get out now while the getting's good. But one of the worst was a kid. What was his name? I shouldn't even say. But he came at me with an entire table. He was just so angry. He pushed the entire table across the classroom, and I there was nowhere to go because I was at the end of the classroom. I sort of just stood in the corner, and he like rammed the corner of the table right into my genitals.
Wow!
And I just went to another room. Just went, okay, guys, I'm going to just go somewhere else to deal with what's happened here. And I went to another room and I took a photo of my face. And I would look at it any time I was thinking, teaching's all right. I just had it as the wallpaper on my phone. No, I didn't. I took a photo of my face and I would just look at it and I'd be like, right, that's the face of what you... Because like sometimes when I'm getting the train, I'll see a bunch of school kids. I'm like, oh, I do miss sort of imparting information to young minds. And then they'll inevitably say something rude to me. I'll be like, yeah, that's the reason. It's the problem. They're just... Young people are just terrible. Just awful. But they don't realise. We were all like that at school.
Yeah.
I imagine you were,
I think I was... Yeah, I was a pretty massive... dick. I mean, I was always trying to be... Me and my friends were always trying to be funny all the time. So we gave any weak teacher like you, we would have given a very hard time.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have so much mind if they were trying to be funny. I mean, it was, in retrospect, the table gag was a lovely bit of business. That was a lovely bit of Buster Keaton-style business. But they weren't even funny. They were just... It was like sharks with the sniff of blood. They could just tell I was weak, and they took full
advantage.
How
do they know that? How do... What differentiate? Well, you obviously are not.
I look
to
like
us.
This yeah. for starters.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because like some teachers, you would just absolutely behave for, and some teachers you really wouldn't. And I wonder how a classroom of kids know which kid that is. I suppose they just test the water.
It's the exact same thing as doing comedy. You know, if you come out and you go you stumble over something or you show a sign of weakness, you can play a self-deprecating character. But if you show that you're not quite in control of the situation in a tough gig, the audience will turn. Yeah. So look forward to that later
on. Yeah, well, I am. I'm very much... I know everything that's happening, and I am very much in control, so it's fine.
Emergency question, is it?
Yep.
Okay.
So, if you... Let me see if I've got a new one. Did I write a new one down today? No. This is one I copied. Oh, no, what? Why? This is one my wife asked.
Okay.
When the news was very bad, we'd had the awful things happen in the news, and we had went out for dinner, and neither of us could talk to each other because we were so upset. And we then walked out of the restaurant and left, and then as we were walking along, my wife said, I've got a question for you. It's not what you're expecting. And I said, okay.
Okay. Well, and firstly, what were you expecting?
Well, I don't know. I thought it would be about the awful news. It was an awful news thing that happened that day. And
she was like, "Where are Aqua now?"
It's almost. She said, "Why do we have frozen peas?"
Because they last longer.
Yeah, but her point being, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But her point being, most vegetables now we have fresh, and there aren't many. You know, you'll just have them in. But peas, you can have fresh peas, but nobody really does has them very often. Everyone has frozen peas. Why is that the only? That's the main format of peas is frozen.
Is it because they're hard to shell or tinned?
Well, this is what I said to her. Yeah, but sometimes tinned, but tinned is horrible, isn't it? But I think frozen peas are nicer than
they are
actual
nice, yeah.
peas.
That is a very... I mean, I was going to say a very good question, but it's not. But it is definitely a question that I can't answer.
Well, I've given
you two answers that I think you're just batting away, they are the correct answer.
Sweet corn you can freeze, but I think you'd have more often tinned rather than... That's kind of unusual.
Tinned,
most
yeah.
vegetables are fresh these days. You feel like it's a harking back to something
sure.
from the past. So you'd have vegetables in tins in the old days.
Although
now you know,
you can get the mixed veg. But I think that might just be you.
No, it
with isn't. Your bloody
it's
Abel everyone. And Cole account. I think people still. I mean, they're clearly still there.
Yeah,
they're still there. Those big bags of like chopped carrots and sweet corn and peas and little yeah. green beans and stuff. But you're just not buying them.
I don't think anyone buys them.
Someone must do. They're still in. We see them in the supermarket.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Doesn't mean a... Wait, hang on a sec. Someone just said I do very quietly. Who was that? Was it you, Andy?
No.
Behind him. You still buy them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so like a bloke like that obviously does, yeah. But...
Oh, how dare you. He's wearing a tie. He looks like a very smart individual.
He'll go home on his own. He'll be sitting in his pants in a little... He hasn't even got a kitchen table. You'll sit in his kitchen. There's not even a table in the kitchen. Is there? It's just you sit in one little chair you've got in a skip. And you eat your... You don't even cook the vegetables. You just eat the frozen... He gets the bag of frozen vegetables and you just eat them like that.
Do you think it could be you that's driving the crowds away? Perfectly lovely fellow in a tie volunteers that he still buys frozen veg to assist a question that was going fucking nowhere, we can all agree.
That is...
And you take him down to Chinatown.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
It's absolutely fine. It's my first time here.
Oh, well, yeah. First and last time here, I imagine.
This is why
welcome
they come
to the herring treatment.
This is why they come. Some women or men want to have you as a teacher telling them off. Blokes like him come here because they want to have their life pulled apart by me. That's why Louise David through here every day, looking at him with his minstrels all down his face. You're having the time of your life, aren't you, David?
I've got frozen cauliflower.
He's got frozen cauliflower.
Horrible, though, isn't it?
It's a weird snack to bring to a theatre, but... Whatever cools
well,
you down.
You're all insulting my wife and her brilliant
well,
question.
No, I think it's an interesting question, but I think we've given the answer. They last longer, they're hard to shell. Also,
that's what I said
they're ice packs, aren't they?
Well, they are useful, yeah.
That's useful to have in the fridge yeah. if you, you know...
Lose a finger.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you want to go bleak. Just, you know, if you, you know, yeah. burn your hand or something like that, yeah.
Just it's interesting to be distracted by that question and think about it, I think.
It is.
I think it's a question to ask whenever something horrible happens in the news, i.e. every time,
every
day.
25 minutes. Yeah. Why okay. do we have frozen peas?
This is a question from Buzz Nigeria. Which are you...
Wait, is that a character from a knockoff version of Toy Story?
It's a very good website where... You can get some excellent emergency questions. Which are your two favourite careers and why?
My two favorite...
I don't think they have to be your own careers.
Careers? I think it's Koreans. Yeah. So I was like, wow.
Well, someone,
one from the north, one from the south, let's do it right.
Someone did put on one of the YouTube questions that they thought is which are your two favourite careers? Like north and south. That would be... so that would be quite good. Careers.
What are your favourite careers?
What are your favourite careers? It's a question to ask someone, according to Buzz Nigeria.
Is it that I've...
I don't think...
Define your terms. Is it that I've done?
I can't define the terms of Buzz Nigeria. I think it's any career that you would like, I imagine. It's a terrible question.
I don't think it's a terrible question. Okay. I think it's way too broad. I think what's your favourite career would have been fine, but I think the fact it's because you've got to pick two. You think, oh, maybe they should complement each other, but why should they? I'm always very impressed whenever I meet anyone who either works for a charity, even though inevitably you go, that's amazing. They go, no, it's shit. The money's always misspent, or someone who works in a museum. I always think those would be the two.
Are those careers though?
Working in a museum, that's a career. Yeah, I mean, I met someone the other day. Victoria, are you here? Everyone I met comes here.
The chances are low.
I mean, no
chances.
Get ready to eat humble frozen peas, because Victoria, you are here, aren't you? Yeah.
What? Can you sense people that? Is this like your sixth sense?
I'm getting frozen cauliflower. Has anyone got any frozen cauliflower on their person?
Where do you work, Victoria, who's reluctant to speak to us?
At the British Museum.
Do you remember when Nish Kumar came round by the... Yeah. Was it last week? Yeah. That's good. It was funny. It was funnier than, you know, should have got a big laugh, but it's hard, isn't it? In comedy. Looks easy, and it's not.
But anyway, the question we're asking is, please stop being so mean, Richard.
Sorry.
The question we're asking is, it's a career, isn't it? That's enough. Lights back down, guys.
Well, Craig, I learned today, who's one of our cameramen, used to work as a charity mugger. Didn't you, Craig?
Did you?
And you only had to get two people a day to get enough to make it work. Is that right? That's insane.
Do you give to any charities?
No, I do. I don't give to charity muggers.
You don't give to charity muggers. No. Do you have a direct debit to any charities?
Yeah, the Kings of Wessex Trust.
Okay, what do they do?
They give money to disadvantaged children in Cheddar. Isn't
that all children in Cheddar?
To go to do stuff for education.
Fantastic.
I do a little bit of work for Scope. I've only raised £300,000 for them. So.
You should tell people about that. What's this bushel and what's that light underneath it? Come on, Richard. Open up, mate. The thing is, because I give to two charities, and I am so delighted when I get the charity mugger from them, and I'm so annoyed. I actually sort of loiter, trying to get caught with, like, you know, whenever it's the charity, I already give to it, mate. Little high five. Yeah. It's a great feeling. Yeah. Oh, speaking of which,
except they're not great. They're thinking, shit,
that could have been my one of, because he would have been a perfect customer only 6 months ago. I did a terrible thing on the way over here where I thought someone was going for a high five. And it's terrible. I was walking past the hairdressers, and a little kid ran out, probably like 5 years old, and put her hand up. And I was like, all right, and put my hand towards her, and she like recoiled like stranger danger. And then I looked up, and obviously the hairdressers was in the hairdressers, which has notoriously glass-fronted, was her family just looking at me like I just tried to grab her. It was awful. And if the hairdresser's like 3 doors down from where I live, so right. I have to move now. Yeah. And as I've already said, I've priced out the area. I can't. So I now just live in the crawl space under my house.
What was she doing? Putting her hand up?
I don't know. Maybe she was like waving to someone on the other side of the road or whatever.
Isn't that the first thing you would assume rather than that child was to high five me?
The problem is in my...
She probably watches Bad Adults.
Very, very unlikely. But yeah, she might have a Netflix account. Okay. But I know, I thought, I don't know what, I thought, you know, sometimes when you think, oh, the world, I've been sat in my flat all day. I had like one thing I needed to do, which meant really leaving the house. I hadn't really talked to anyone. I don't know if that's coming across. But I was like, oh, the world actually is a lovely place. Look at this little kid who wants to high five a stranger. But no, she didn't. And she was upset, and so were her family, and boom. Yeah.
When that happens to you, though, can you not just pretend you're a sort of a weird kid with some kind of beard growth disorder? Just go, it's all right. No, it's all right. I'm five as well.
That is getting into even worse territory than just carrying on walking to Elmer's End Station, I think.
If I was you, I would shave and so that I could pretend to be 5 years old in that sort of situation.
If I shaved, do you think I'd look 5 years old?
Yeah, I do, because you're very small. That is what I'm saying.
What's the difference in our height? About an inch and a half?
Yeah.
But it's key.
It's
a pivotal inch and a half. Wait, you've been
waiting for Godot. You know what this is about. If you you're the
it's
one
not about one bit shorter than the other.
It's not what it's about. Whatever we'll kick down whoever is below us, and literally you are. And you're the one guest I've ever had on here who is smaller than me.
Is that true? Is that the reason you booked me?
Yeah.
Well, there's no other reason. I'm the smallest guest you've ever had on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably even out of the ladies.
How big are your hands? Dwarf my hands. I've still got the smallest hands.
What competition is this?
Well, that means you've got the hands over me that you can.
Yeah, but I don't live my life seeing what I can get over on people in terms of size of body parts. When the girl put her little hand out, I was going, oh, hooray, high five. Not, call those hands. These are hands, you bitch slap. You're a strange man. You really are. Strange man.
This is a question from Ali's Randomage. He's going to ask you two questions. He's got 800 questions on his website.
Let's do
it. A website. These are two of the best ones. Have you ever flown a kite?
Yes.
How did that go for you? Doesn't have a follow-up question on Ali's Randomage. Well, I will follow it up.
I've flown a kite. Yeah. I've made a kite. I've flown a stunt kite.
Wow.
I've had lots of fun times with kites.
Yeah.
I recently was on a beach in Kerala, and they sell little kites there, and I had to stand next to a man flying a kite while his son had a photograph taken with my wife. So, because apparently people with red hair are very exotic.
Yeah.
Like, it was really exciting because for once, one of us got to behave like a celebrity. Everywhere we went, like groups of kids would like take photos of my wife, and then like whole families would want to stand with her and have photographs. So yes, I have flown a kite.
Yeah.
Next question.
It's interesting how I got into the whole your wife having red hair and stuff.
That's true, yeah.
I think there's some resentment in there about her being, and Kerala being...
No, I loved it. It was really exciting.
Because you'd think, oh, look at that very small man. Let's get a photo taken with him.
Not in Kerala, unfortunately. All the men are pretty small. Yeah, it's a real shame. Where can I go? With like somewhere like Norway, where they're all big strapping...
Lilliput.
I'm sorry. Oh, God, that really made me laugh.
This is another question from Ali's Randomage. I've looked through it so you don't have to. These are the only two of the 800 that are good.
Okay.
Have you flown a kite? It's a good question.
It's a great question,
Have
you flown a kite?
Yeah.
Of course you have.
A few years ago, and the girlfriend was with at the time, that I was on a beach in Cornwall with their entire family, and they had like a little 2-year-old child, and they had this kite, and they were really into flying kites. It was Julia Suwala's family. And her little nephew was little tiny. He was going, whoa, and I was doing the kite, and I gave it to him.
Oh, no.
And he just let it go.
Oh.
And so it flew all the way up over into the town, and we had to go and get it, and Julia Swallow was really angry with me. And I said, you want him to hold it? And she said, yeah, but he's two, he's not going to hold it. So he made me look like a right idiot.
Yeah. We've got real beef with little kids, you and I, haven't we? Yeah. Those pricks won't let us have our fun. I thought you were going to say, I think we were all hoping that was going to be like the kid grabbed it and then shot off over into the sea and disappeared and you never saw the kid again.
No, he's
fine.
And
that's the reason it all
broke
up. But
funnily enough, I think I might have said this last time I asked the question, but I can't remember. I never listened back to these. But Julia, she loved kites, and we once went to the club, to Tooting Common, to a kite festival. There was like one of the really big kites and the guys flying it, a massive one, and she said, can I have a go? And she lifted off the ground and nearly flew away. So she did that. Did Julia Suwala, one of the many ways. She nearly got killed in loads of different ways when I was going out with her. There's about three of, not by...
Nothing to do with you.
No. She nearly got...
Let's just go to this kite festival.
That was her own...
that's a thing.
She was...
Oh, Julia,
she
there's
was
a kite
flying
festival.
Off...
Just because all of the people at this kite festival are actors you may have seen from, from TV shows I've been in.
She flew off the ground.
How far off the ground?
Like a few feet, and someone had to grab her and pull her back down.
Grab her ankle.
Yeah. It might have made me misremembering.
Did she? Was she so excited that she jumped? And that's the story.
It could be.
Are you still in touch, you and her?
No.
Have you seen the AbFab movie?
No.
It was good. I really liked it. Okay. Yeah, I saw it yesterday.
I was concerned, but lots of people are saying it's
really, really funny. No, okay. It's super, super funny. I mean, it's like it's all over the place. It's like they're writing the plots by like laying down train tracks as the train's going along. But that's sort of the excitement of it.
Yeah.
It's it's really, really good. So that's my recommendation. You're listening to Crosby's Recommendations, where I recommend a thing that's probably going to do fine without.
This isn't coming out till August anyway. So.
Oh, well, in which case, right in time for the Blu-ray.
This is the other question from Alan's Rand. Have you ever demolished a wall or a building? And I like that it's both the options are there. Like, have you ever demolished a wall? No. Have you ever demolished a building? Oh, yeah, I have demolished a building. Now I think about it. I suppose that had walls. Now I think about it. Are you a demolishing kind of... When I was a kid, me and my friends threw rocks at an old house in the woods until bits of it fell down. I mean, it was already quite fallen down.
But you didn't demolish it, did you?
Well, no, the big bits... It's so exciting.
Which bits fell down?
Well, just like you throw a rock and then it was like an old stone house, so, you know, it was already fallen down, but then bits of the wall would fall down.
When you're
throwing rocks at it.
When?
I was 28 years old.
Okay, of course. Yeah. When? What? When?
It was in Shipham Woods.
Yeah.
In about 1983.
Okay.
You were 3 years old. You could have come and helped us.
That seems like something like very oldie worldy as a thing to do, even in 1983.
Yeah. To throw rocks at a building.
Throw rocks at an old stone house till it fell over.
Yeah.
You should be going out and watching the Human League. Surely you should be.
I lived in Somerset.
Fair enough.
Shipham Wood was as good as it got.
No, I've never. I fell over a wall.
Yeah.
I had a very tough gig in Eastbourne. Which went really, really badly. It was one of Jim Grant's gigs. They were always tough to play, and I had a really terrible time. And at the end of the gig, I was went and stood outside the venue, and I didn't realise it was very dark. I was chatting to Carl Donnelly, and there was a very low wall. Mm. I didn't realise, and I fell over the wall and then rolled back into the venue where I just died. I torn my trousers open. I cut my knee open.
Yeah.
And so I went. Thanks very much, everybody. You hated me, and I think I ended it by going, oh, you know what? I fucking hate Eastbourne, or something like, you know, like something mature like that to get the crowd on side for a nice round of applause. And I walked off. And then while Jim was still comparing, like 10 seconds later, I rolled back into the venue, covered in blood, for my encore.
They're not a good answer to the question, though.
No,
though.
Not technically.
Have you ever fallen over a wall?
I mean, basically, what you've asked me is a series of questions, and I've told you unrelated anecdotes in order to save myself. Have you ever flown a kite? No, but someone took a photo of my wife. Have you ever demolished a building? No, but I once did a gig for Jim Grant.
Yes. I feel the wife story was a bit of a humble brag as well, that you were saying to people, I know I don't look like it, but I've got a wife.
Yeah.
I am a woman agreed to marry me.
There's at least two other people who want to have sex with me out there.
That's true. They could be the same person.
They could be the same
and
person.
It could be your wife. It could be the way your wife is trying to communicate sexually.
Wouldn't be, yeah.
Why don't you just go home tonight and try and be a strict teacher?
go home and wake her up and say, very poor, see me.
Yeah. This is a horrible... I've been asking this question. It gets more horrible all the time.
Okay.
I don't know why I keep asking it. Which of the 2016 celebrity deaths has hit you the hardest? Been some good ones, haven't there? I mean, you know, bad ones.
Oh, man, yeah. It's been...
What's amazing is about 2016 is you're expecting it and it still surprises you.
It still
is
an absolute gut punch, isn't it?
You think, I'm going to be ready for whoever it is next, and then it isn't.
Yeah,
you're not ready.
I don't know, like, fucking Caroline Ahern was really sad.
It was.
Really, really upsetting. I just, you know, on Saturday night coming back from a gig, just watched tons of clips of Mrs. Merton, and it really was nothing like it on telly. It was so good. I mean, same with the Royal Family. Loads of people have tried to do it since, and it's never been done quite as well. It left a massive sort of footprint. Obviously, David Bowie, I don't know if I told you, but I worked in the NBC. That he he didn't reference the NBC, but he referenced the Market Square, moving through Market Square. He wasn't talking. He wasn't talking about NBC closing down, but I think he probably knew.
Yeah.
Probably knew the music video club wasn't going to last for very long. I don't know. They're all horrible.
Yeah. But then, like, there's so many. You kind of suddenly you remember one and forget, and then you go, oh God, that he's died as well.
Yeah.
It's awful.
There must be sort of like old celebs going, I can't go out this year. I've got to just hang on because otherwise I just won't be remembered.
Well, yeah, if you're a low... I remembered who it was when we were talking about this.
Yeah,
there was Victoria Wood and... Who else? Who was the other one who died at the same time as Victoria Wood? Prince.
Yes.
And then the next guy who died was the bloke who played the ballroom dancing guy on Heidi High. That's not good enough, is it? That was presumptuous of him to die. We were waiting for, you know, Muhammad Ali would have been a great, great one.
Yeah, well, good news, he did die, yeah.
He needed to come in next.
So, yeah, great one.
But he needed to come in there. Or Paul McCartney or someone. It's arrogant of the...
Yeah.
It was arrogant of him to die, I think, at that stage.
Yeah, it is hubris, isn't it? For anyone else dying this year, I mean, get over yourself, mate.
Yeah. Who do you think will die next?
Okay.
If you had to predict a celebrity death.
Celebrity death pool. I don't know. Is Donald Sinden still alive?
I don't think he is. I think Windsor Davis is.
Windsor Davis, then?
Yeah.
That's not great, is it?
Then you might have got him there.
I know people often say, can you take one bit out? I think that might be the one bit. Because poor old... Oh.
But like, imagine, you know, by this is coming out at the end of August, imagine he's just died the week we do this. You'll be going, yes! They'll be probably going,
will I?
Yeah.
Yes. I think you and I are very different people. Yes. Windsor Davis is dead. And have you seen the size of his tiny hands? I wouldn't. I don't wish death on anyone.
I'm not asking you to wish it. I'm just asking you to predict it.
It's that problem. It's that jinxy thing.
It's the opposite. It's the opposite of wishing it. It's saying, who do you think will be taken?
That's not the opposite. That is definitely not the opposite. I mean, nice spin, mate, but that is...
It's who do you not want to die, though, isn't it?
That is not the question you asked me. Who do I not want to die? I don't know, my gorgeous wife who wants to take photos of?
If she does die, we'll definitely take that bit out.
Well, every cloud.
out of respect.
Oh, is that what it is? Out of respect. No, leave it in and dedicate the episode to her. Do a little somber message where, like, oh, obviously we didn't realise. Poor old Matthew's wife, Charlotte. She was ridden to death. Just a little pair of frosted glasses on top of her tiny red-haired coffin. Little red coffin. A lot of Kerenan people at that funeral. Oh, my God. Why, Lord, why? You took her too young. No, I really hope my wife doesn't. Or Windsor Davis. I love them equally.
If... You had to choose. If it was a choice,
if it was a choice
between Windsor Davis and your wife,
Sophie's choice, yes, as it's known.
Windsor Davis is an old man who might already be dead.
We don't know. For a show fueled by Wikipedia, I'm surprised that wasn't one of your research questions. Can you have that as a new emergency question next week? Whoever you've got,
who would rather die, Windsor Davis or Matthew Crosby's wife?
Yeah. It's your new emergency.
We can do that.
It's your new emergency question.
I mean, for somebody, it's a great question to ask someone else because, you know, they probably will like Windsor Davis.
They'll probably go Windsor, yeah. And the worst thing is, Charlie is a big fan of the podcast. She listens to it in the bath. Who's to say she won't go? Well, if that's the way, I don't know, fucking whoever your next guest is, that's the way Charlie Sheen feels, then I'll just lower myself under the surface of the water until the bubbles stop.
It'll be ironic if she drops the iPod in the bath and it electrocutes her. That's how she dies.
That'll be ironic and impossible.
If it's connected.
She's one of the few people who listen to this on a toaster. So.
I've got to write it in.
Oh my God.
excuse me, audio people, while I just write, because I'll forget other.
Who would you?
Who would you?
It's your handwriting is appalling. Do you want me to write it in for you?
No, because I won't be able to read
who
that.
Would you rather? Who would you rather died? Or... Winter Davis or MC Wife? MC Wife sounds like the worst rapper of all time. Oh yeah, okay, that's great. I'm sure she'll be delighted.
Oh dear, I'm trying to just tired, but it's...
yeah,
it's funny. You know, it's...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah,
what's going on my Edinburgh poster?
You know, it's been a terrible couple of weeks, but
oh, it's been an awful couple of
weeks.
Yeah,
but
it's
that's
been really, really,
you know,
bad.
It's nice to laugh again, isn't it?
I feel like we've made Britain great again. I feel like we really have.
Why can't everyone be babies?
Because then I just walk around trying to high five all the time. Why can't everyone be babies? Would you prefer to be a baby?
Well, I wouldn't. It'd be nice if everyone was a baby because, you know, they'd be. We would just say everyone, they're kind of nice and they get on with each other and they just sort of sit around, don't do anything. There wouldn't be any bad things happening.
Yeah, but then, like, everyone would die.
They would die quite quickly.
I mean, that's quite a bad thing. I know you don't think so.
They would die quite quickly, but they're going to die anyway. So, you know.
So you would prefer, like, let's say 5 to 10 days of everyone being a baby.
I don't think they'd last that long.
Okay, well, all right, let's say...
I've got a baby, I reckon, if you left on its own for, like, especially a little one.
Okay.
A day.
And is everyone the same age? Is everyone bang on the same age?
Yeah.
Okay, so say everyone is... your baby is 17 months, is that right? 17 months at time of recording. And my wife currently still alive. So just make sure we know where we are. They'll go, oh, that had to have been recorded in July of 2016. Because we know the terrible things that happened. So we all get older. But yeah, so everyone's 17 months.
Yeah.
So let's say a day, 2 days. You'd prefer 2 days and then the entire planet is wiped out as opposed to what we've got now.
But it'd be nice. Those 2 days would be fun, though, wouldn't they?
But no one would... You wouldn't.
No one remembers their life after they're dead, do they?
That's a good point.
So you know, they would just experience it and then they would die. But it's not so much the death part of it. I'm not like imagining 20 million dead babies in London.
That's good.
I'm imagining is we're all just sitting around playing with each other, pooing ourselves,
and then just lying in that poo.
Yeah, be good.
Puking on yourself.
Yeah,
and then lying in that puke. So you'd sooner be like lying. That shows you what a terrible state the country is in.
Yeah.
That Richard Herring would prefer to be lying on his back, covered in shit, and like burped up. It wouldn't even be burped up breast milk. It would be just burped up bile. Sooner than have Michael Gove possibly be our Prime Minister. Seems fair enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Anyway, back to the emergency question. We need to get back to the real questions because the emergency questions
took us down a very dark path.
Went very dark. When you were in Whitstable doing the comedy gigs that you did there, did you ever see Peter Cushing on his bicycle?
No. There was a place called Cushing's Way.
Right.
But I don't think he was around when I was running those gigs.
I think
gigs.
He was still alive.
Oh, no, but I just mean, like, the gigs were late at night and it was too dark for him to cycle.
I guess it was.
That's what I mean, yeah. No, I never saw Cushy.
Did you ever see Ben Moore in Whitstable?
Yes, he came and saw, a few gigs there.
Yeah.
And I remember him... sitting there in the front row and looking increasingly more and more sad, and then leaving without saying thanks. So there was one. There was one gig when it all. You know, those gigs were like I used to run a gig in Whitstable in an arts centre in Whitstable in Kent. And Richard, you did a bunch of them. But
they
could go either way. Those gigs, couldn't they?
A little bit.
They were not a lot. I mean, but no, for you, you always had a nice time. But they would often be like sort of chippy audience members and. It was quite near, like, it's quite near Farage country, quite near Thanet. So occasionally comics would do stuff like a comic would drop out and I'd have to book a local guy. And I remember Ben watching a local guy doing a kind of, you know, a very, it would probably go over great guns now, but it was, he was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
This guy in being outwardly racist. And I just remember Ben just looking incredibly sad all the way through.
Oh.
Yeah. Ben was in Bad Odds.
Was he?
He played me.
Did he?
Yeah. played
all the way through.
Yeah, all the way through. Yeah, he played a version of me when Tom put on a play about the goings on in the house, and he played me. And he is so thin he could fit into my clothes, right. Even though he's like, well, he must be 6.
He's very tall. It's interesting you cast an actor who's so tall to play to play a version of you.
That was the kind of jokes we were dealing with back in 2013. Yeah, what a lovely guy.
He's a nice guy. Do you know Ben Moore?
No.
I mean, that was clear from the...
Look him up.
That was clear from the complete silence while we chatted about it.
He's my mate. He's one of my mates.
Has he ever done this?
He's from Whitstable. He did the Edinburgh one. So look, you maybe listen to that, rather than sitting there complaining.
Hey, listen. He didn't complain. He literally just answered the question in a very straight fashion.
And it was a very...
Do you know who he is? No, don't turn on him, all right?
It was no... I don't, and why have you wasted 2 minutes of my time?
All right. You know what, Richard, you were right. Mate, go fuck yourself. Anyway,
that's post Brexit Britain. There, that is what happens. That's why that never used to happen, did it, in the old days?
The bloody youth of today, isn't it? It's either a young person or a pensioner. Hate them both.
People were just very polite. Now, I used to do a website, I couldn't find this anymore, and I can't quite remember what it was, but it made me laugh. Your website, you had a blog.
I had a blog, yeah, yeah.
That made me laugh, like, consistently very much, but there was a thing about racist tattoos, wasn't there? Was that what it was?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
What was it, man? Because it made me laugh so much, I want to find it.
I did a review of various racist tattoos. I can't remember what I was Googling. I went on Google Images, and basically I think must have just typed in, like, racist tattoos. Because yeah. I was thinking of getting, you know... thinking of spicing up my look.
Yeah.
No, I just thought I'd find some tattoos. But some of them were just like bad ideas. Like I think a guy had written "fuck you" on his forehead.
Yeah.
I don't feel that strongly about anything, you know. But like I love but I think one of them, he'd shaved off his eyebrows.
Yeah.
And he'd written "fuck you" in what I describe as elegant cursive. that was what it was. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But also, a guy had the Nazi eagle on his
throat.
That's
right. Yeah, yeah.
Which is like on his starting with his Adam's apple as the sort of swastika, and then going out all the way up the neck. And that is a real like that guy really means it. He's like Richie Manick carving 4 real into his arm. He's really going for it.
It is a statement.
It's very much a statement. I will never ever get a job at Nando's. There is no way I'm going to get a job unless I wear a polo neck.
Yeah, what happened to your blog and why isn't it there?
It's still there, but I can see it. I it was just because I got this sort of strange relationship with the internet. I remember, like, it was kind of partly due to you, in that I would sometimes see you and we would chat as friends, but I'd know the stuff you were telling me because you'd written it already on Warming Up.
Yeah.
So you'd tell me about your holiday and I was genuinely interested in a friend, but I knew all of the stories because you'd written like thousands of words about it, which I'd read.
Yeah.
So I thought, that's happening where I would, you know, like chat to people and they're like, yeah, we know about this already. So I had no bants. You know, I thrive on bants. And the other thing was, occasionally my mum would say, like Rosemary Nelligan from the church read your blog. And I was like, oh, I don't want her seeing my reviews of racist tattoos. It just sort of, so I think I just, that's what I like about Twitter. I think a lot of people have this idea that Twitter is like, shit, you know, oh, I had this for lunch today. But it's just basically, it's a way of just putting jokes out and it doesn't really reveal anything about yourself.
Yeah.
I've sort of been quite careful to not put too much of myself on the internet. But I've
been quite careful.
I know. But I sort of, I think you've got to do it, you've either got to do it the herring way and really go for it, or kind of just not. You know, occasionally you'll go like, oh, this person doesn't even have a Twitter account or a Facebook page or anything, and, you know, how will they ever write for Improvisation, My Dear Mark Watson, unless they know the new technology? But no, I sort of, that's part of the reason. But you can, I'll give you the login if you want to go back and read it.
I would love to. Sure, make me laugh. So I'd give it to everyone else and put it on the internet.
No. Also, some of it was like a genuine diary from like my, like I never properly went for it and was like, this is what I'm feeling at the moment. But like when I broke up with my girlfriend in 2005. I was just like, I feel so miserable. So I just put up, I just went on Google Images and typed in Don Rickles. Have you seen Don Rickles?
Yeah.
and just got as many pictures of Don Rickles and just made that my blog post for the day. Right. It's like, that's... like
had I you can't... broken up with Don Rickles?
I had broken up.
Yeah.
I broke up with the insult comedian Don Rickles, yeah. Little racist for my liking. but not willing to commit to it. No, like it was just so I couldn't really pick a side of am I actually explaining to the world how I'm feeling?
Yeah,
I still feel that with stand-up a little bit. Like sometimes, like my favourite stand-ups are people who are just utterly confessional on stage and really mind their life. And sometimes I would, you know, I would write shows and I'd be like, well, I'm not going to say that because I don't care about making myself look bad at all. I don't really, that doesn't bother me. But I would think, oh, what if this hurts other people in my life? Mm-hmm. Which is weird from someone who's just talking about their wife dying for 25 minutes.
Well,
but
you talk about my baby dying as well, so that we're even.
That's true. That's true. I mean, yeah. That's so fair enough. Nil, nil. Let's call it that. But yeah, I don't know. It's a strange thing, isn't it? That's what I like about doing sketch comedy is that you don't really have to. No one knows who you are.
No,
but you can kind of Trojan horse in information about, you know.
But you know, it's like we're talking about with Nish. Not everything has to be. Not comedy doesn't have to be one type of thing. So you know, it would be quite funny if in Pappy's you suddenly did a 10-minute monologue about something terrible happening in your life. But
I think that's kind of like, well, weirdly, that's sort of what we, when we do our podcasts, they're not really, you know, they're us being ourselves, chatting as ourselves, and sometimes it does get into it. But also, you know, that's no one else in your life wants to be mined for material. Do you know, like, no, like, this sounds like I'm saying it directly to you, which is probably true. But like, no one else in my life. So sometimes it happened with my blog. Sometimes I'd make a joke about my brother and he misinterpreted it, and then I have to go and, you know, sit down with my brother and go, look, I didn't mean it. And I think, what do I want more? Do I want to be able to, you know, like, have consistently good gigs, and like people go, oh, he really pours his heart out, or do I want to be able to have working relationships with the people around me? Which is a weird choice, you know, that lots of comedians have to make. And I think the older I got, the more I thought I'd sooner just have those relationships.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think like it's the danger is, you know, there's a line, and it's a different place for each person.
Yeah,
and the danger is that sometimes you will, you know, over open up in the wrong place. I think.
Totally.
And I think I'm quite good at not doing that. But there are definitely times when I've done. I've never written about breakups. I always try to not write about other people.
Yeah.
But you know. But
well, if I break up with somebody, like if I have talked about it on stage, but I would never name the person, or I'd never say, or say anything rude or mean about them. I hope anyway, because you know. Fuck me. It's not really on.
Yeah.
What have you done though? If you had to have,
I think the only times that I think like I've used in social media, when was the last time I was doing Edinburgh and it wasn't going very well, I think I talked about it too much on Twitter. That's all. I think I just kind of know, went on about badly it was going too much on
Twitter. That's a separate thing as well. I was chatting to Lou Sanders about this the other day, and it's the thing of being honest about how your career is going is often detrimental, because if you go like, well, I'm not doing that well this year, then people go, oh, I've heard about him, he's not doing that well this year, and no one wants to go and see a show that's not doing that well. Mm-hmm. So I think you can have a personal knock-on effect of doing that, which means that I often walk around looking like relentlessly jolly in order to be like, hey, everything's going great, even though you know, sometimes sometimes it isn't. Mm-hmm. but maybe that's my hang-up, which clearly is. I just remembered, actually. I think another trigger was when I did Mark Watson's 24-hour show, and
not interested in that one. I only like the improvisation, my dear Watson.
Okay, in which case I won't take. No, he had a thing where like he was chatting to someone in the audience. They said, "I've not seen the movie Antichrist by Lars von Trier. It's currently on at the cinema." And I was like, "I want to see that movie." And he was like, "Well, come up on stage, and you two can go on a date tomorrow, and we'll have a little event."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, I'm just going to call my girlfriend, my now wife," and I called her up and said, "Hey, is it all right?" And I was like, stupid, like, I was pissed, and I woke her up at 2 a.m. and went, "Is it all right?" And she's like, yeah, fine, I love you, bye. And then we hung up, and then the next day I put on Facebook like, I'm just off on a date with my new girlfriend. And then she started getting phone calls, like, just because you're an idiot and Edinburgh's such a bubble. She started getting calls, and then she called me up and said, "Oh, why have you done this? You've humiliated me." And I was like, I didn't mean to. You know, luckily I've got over that now. I'll only discuss your death. But like, no, I didn't, like, and I just think, you know, it's just, you, I value my relationships more than I value my career.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because if my career doesn't go better, my wife's going to leave me. So I don't know what I don't know what's going on there. But it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Well, let's quickly talk. We probably should shut up soon. But no, we've got a bit of time.
Oh, great.
Let's because you mentioned Pappies, and as a live show, it's just unbelievably. You know, they've been all the shows I've seen of it have been amazing.
Oh, thank
and
you.
But I don't think you've ever quite captured it on the. You've had various goes of doing it on TV.
That's fair to say. Yeah. I think it's that thing of it's very hard. I mean, I think it's. I was going to dodge the bullet again. That's true of all live performance, but I don't think that is true, because there's people who've got a live act that have gone, oh, this is a great distillation of what it is. I think. One of the things we've always done is we love performing in front of a live audience. I mean, you can feel the energy in the room. It's electric. This is what I thrive on, right? This is my bread and butter, yeah. Richard. We've always done well in front of live crowds. So everything we've done on telly has been with a live audience.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's become very unfashionable. I think, you know, that's that old candle after laugh track. It just, I think if you watch a thing, we did a show. But like I said, Bad Alts on BBC Three, and I knew, like, I mean, we got two series, and I'm super, super proud of them, especially the second series, which unfortunately isn't out there. They didn't do a DVD of it, so people can't really see it unless you sort of, I imagine some of it's been put on YouTube.
Yeah.
Comments disabled, fingers crossed. because I'm phenomenally proud of those six episodes, especially. But we'd be on BBC Three, and everything on BBC Three was geared towards this 16 to 24. Like, they wouldn't even allow us to play. I was 33 at the time. They're like, you've got to be 29. Like, anyone's going to watch a show and go, what, this guy's 33? But I'm 29, I can't relate. It's crazy. Yeah. But they would, like, you've got to be 29, pretend to be 29 on the show. Or in fact, it might have even been, like, even younger than that. But still, they made us do this. And every time I'd watch the show, the trailer before it would always be like, coming soon on BBC Three, and like all this sort of, you know, crazy graphics and like a dubstep song. And then our theme tune was written by Philip Pope, because like he writes TV theme tunes. So we're like, Philip Pope's going to write it.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was fooling around when we were young. And it just was such a weird fit for that channel.
Yeah.
I think on BBC Two it probably would have stood a better chance, but it was just a really weird fit. And I think for young people who like have never watched, like, I grew up watching like the British Empire and Red Dwarf, and I loved those shows. And I mean, even like, you know, Fist of Fun, you had a live audience there. Yeah. Like, you made a feature of that, and I wanted that to be wanted it to be like an old fashioned, you know, an old fashioned silly sitcom, but the kids who were watching it didn't know all we were was a cattle grid between them and Family Guy, you know. And so that was, But we did two series, and it was such an amazing thing to do.
I'm not saying it wasn't good. I'm just saying I don't think you ever.
It's not
a
distillation of what we did.
Yeah, I mean, but it's quite different than what you do in the live stuff as well, though, I think.
That's true. But we did, like, the first pilot we did was basically just the live show taped.
Yeah.
And that didn't work. So then they said, then Channel 4 said, would you like to do a game show? We did a game show, and then that, again, just didn't really, felt a bit like a sort of, you know, sort of didn't really come across. It was, I guess it was kind of like they wanted us to do like a version of Celebrity Juice. I think that's what they wanted.
Yeah.
We couldn't really do that.
And well, I think TV is not producing great ideas. You know, it's going away exactly from what you're talking about, to be about game shows and to be, you know, very lowest common denominator, I suppose, in a way, or at least not embracing newer, more exciting stuff. So you'll get into it by doing a panel show or a game show, but you won't, you know, they won't give you a chance to do a sketch show, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's interesting, because also We Are Clang, who are a fantastic live,
amazing,
live sketch troupe, three people, maybe a bit ruder than your stuff, but that didn't work as a
no, that
TV
didn't
show.
Really. And again, they tried to do a similar thing, like a sort of hybrid sketch show sitcom with a live audience. And I really liked it. We had, in fact, for the first series, we had Ben Kellett, the same director. And I think they were kind of, they sort of said, hey, this is how Klein did it. Could you do it a little bit differently? And we went, well, we'll just do it more traditional. And actually, we probably should have been even wackier with. The thing is, though, whenever I see things that are very meta on telly, it sort of annoys me. I prefer something that's just straight down the middle funny. But then, you know, harder to make, harder to write, harder to perform.
Yeah.
But But
the,
yeah.
The podcasts are kind of hitting it right, though. But, I mean, is that because it's sort of self-produced?
Well,
you'll do
well,
what you want to do.
The good thing about the podcast is there's literally no restrictions, and we can change it every... We can record for as long as we like. And also, like, it's much smaller. We were performing in a 300-seat studio. Also, look, we had to learn how to act in front of a camera, which we'd never done before. It's part of the reason why we never filmed any of our live shows, because I think people have got very good memories of them that came to see them. But I think if you saw it, you'd be like, why has he got, a paper hat on his head? You suspend a lot of disbelief that way. And we also, like, the first series of Bad Olds, my God, someone should have said to us, hey, it's fine, you're mic'd, everyone can hear you. You don't need to be screaming your head off. It's like, it's so frantic and and also because we were excited to be in front of a live crowd. Yeah. And when we come out during a Pappy's live show, the first 3, sometimes 30 minutes is us just going, and that works because the crowd goes, back at you, and you can feed off their energy.
Yeah.
But if you're just sitting at home watching it, you go, what the hell are these cunts up to? It's like, and I think that was, we I think the second series we'd learned more how to perform in front of a camera and how to write a good show. But by that point, BBC Three was going. It was dead. So, but
I mean, some things aren't meant. Some things work in one context and aren't meant to be another thing anyway. It's not. I mean, those live shows are amazing anyway, regardless.
Yes, that's true.
It's a shame that we're not going to see them because you haven't recorded them. But
no, I think there might be a recording of one of them
right
somewhere. We did a gig in Cornwall and a guy filmed it,
right?
But I've lost his email,
right?
And I don't know. But that's
on his phone or properly.
He just got a camera phone out and just filmed like 30 seconds of it. That's all that recorded. No, it was like a proper shoot.
Yeah.
Like, just like this. Real proper, whatever, 3-camera shoot. And, but we just never got back in touch with him. I don't know. It all fits with this idea of not ever wanting to ruin people's memories of it, Like, I just think people have that. It's like, I really liked. Have you ever done any of the sort of stand up TV shows? Have you ever done
I did Russell Howard's one. I've done a couple, Edinburgh and Beyond and stuff.
Russell Howard's one's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
Except I think the audience are always so young.
Yeah.
It's quite weird.
I pretended to be 29.
Of course, yeah.
They go, why is that? What's happened? He's got some terrible wasting disease.
Yeah. But I really liked the one they did. I thought was really good. Was one called Dave's One Night Stand. Did you ever do that one?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought that was like the best distillation of what stand up is.
Yeah.
Because there was one that was it was Johnny Vegas. I think it was Seymour Mace and Justin Morehouse and Johnny Vegas.
Yeah.
Really, like, 3 amazingly funny guys, and they did that sort of big swooping crane shot of the crowd as Justin Morehouse was coming on, and you could see people going to the bar. And I thought, fucking, that's amazing that they put that in, because that's what stand-up is.
Yeah.
Like, it is things failing and people going, oh, I've seen this guy, or wandering off. And I think that's the thing that telly... It softens the edges of things to a certain extent, so that it doesn't feel like it's fun or live or exciting.
Yeah,
that's what's good about podcasts. Who gives a fuck? Just leave it all in.
Yeah,
right, guys.
Yeah, we all forget what we're doing up here. Are you going to? What's I going to?
Am
say?
I?
I don't know.
Am I going to fly a kite later on? I am, actually, yeah. Do you want to go to Blackheath Common after this and fly a kite?
Yeah, have you ever flown a kite at night?
A night kite?
Yeah.
No. We could be onto something. Would you have to
could
put
you
little...
ring your wife? I'll ring my wife and I'll wake her up.
I won't ring her from the stage. I've been burned by that before. But yeah, I'm up for flying a night kite if you want to.
Do you want to go in one of the big ones, the Julia Sawala lifting ones?
Yeah, that's what we'll do. Where will sell us a kite at this time of night? Because it's now, we're in Leicester Square and it's 2 minutes past 10.
Amazon Prime? You can do that
Amazon Prime now?
Yeah.
There's the Amazon Prime Now thing that we could actually get a... I mean, we're getting into Chris Ramsey territory here. Can we get a kite delivered to a theatre? It's not quite pizza on a train, is it?
It's not.
Yeah.
Can't remember. I was going to ask you about the future of Pappies and what. The thing is, you all like each other, right? You get on very well with each other.
Yeah,
which
we do
find
get
fascinating
on.
As in a group of comedians working together.
That's interesting. I was going to ask you about this because, like, we do genuinely get on. We don't. And in fact, one of the things when we were making Bad Ops, we were living up in Glasgow. We were living together. We were writing together every single day. We were filming together every day, but we never really. Like, didn't really have any big fallings out. We just, because you know, you're living the absolute dream. You're getting to make a sitcom, whatever the rest of the world thinks. You're getting to live that, but we don't. And we have to do's occasionally.
Yeah.
But I was going to ask, like, you've been in a couple of different double acts.
I have.
When for both of them did you know it was over?
Well,
I mean, not over, but, you know, when do you think, we've probably gone as far as we can go?
I think, you know, with Lee and Herring, it wasn't really our choice. I mean, I think it's good for us to stop.
What do you mean it wasn't your choice? Like,
well, because we were working, and then the TV said no more, and then we had to go and make a living.
Because that's sort of what we're sort of at that stage now, in that, we had, you know, those two successful years, and now we are, like, with podcasting, but obviously, as you, well, you know, no one became a millionaire from that. And I'm program associating my little nutsack off every single day I can. And Clarkie's doing adverts and Tom's doing lots of directing and stuff. But in terms of actually doing stuff together, excuse me, we don't make a lot of our money through Pappies. But that's kind of the challenge that we're in at the moment, is trying to still work together that way.
I think, you've got outlets which we didn't, you know, we could have carried on doing live work, I suppose, me and Stu.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're dividing it, it's still different, you're dividing it between all those different people.
Yeah, we don't make a lot out of live.
But I think, you know, we'd got to a point where we probably both wanted to go our own separate ways anyway. I think we might have done another series, but I don't think we'd have done much more. So, you know, we knew it wasn't, you know, we knew we were, you know, we would wanted to do different things.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this gave us the option to go, okay, let's go and do different things. Even though he script edited on the Al Murray thing that I then did for the next 2 years, so we were still working together for another couple of years, even though we weren't working together in the double act.
Are you happier now? Were you happier then or now?
No, I'm definitely happier now. I wasn't very happy doing Lee and Herring.
Right.
It was hard work, and it was, you know, we didn't get on all the time. So
do you look back on the work with, like, fondness now? Do you see the work separate from the difficulty of the
relationship? Yeah, I mean, it was, I just look back, we worked so hard that I couldn't enjoy it. So, like, I look back and go, if we had that time again, I sit back and enjoy what we were doing
a bit more. But that's life, isn't it? That's the way life works out, that you don't ever, you look back and go, that was a good time.
But, you know, we had an amazing opportunity, and I think at the time it just felt, this is the thing that happens, this is the thing that happens. I think if it had been another 5 years down the line, I'd have gone, this is pretty amazing, you know, let's make the most of it. I'm very proud of what we did, and I think it's good stuff, but I'm also glad we're not doing it anymore.
Yeah. You're right, it was an amazing opportunity, but I think now it's like, if you're a new comic now, if you go and do gigs in London, there'll often be like 15 acts on the bill.
Yeah.
They're all new, and lots of them are very good.
Yeah.
It's not like they're all just, you know, lunatics. There's people who are really, really, really talented. Yeah. So how do you make yourself stand out?
It's horrible. So, yeah. And then if you get something on TV, you know, you've got, as you say, two series on TV.
Yeah.
But you've still got to stand out from that. So, you know, you've got to a stage that most people will never get to.
Yes.
And then, you know, and you've done yourself and you're happy with it, which is the same, similar to me and Stu, really, at the time. We were doing stuff and no one was... Because there were less channels, it was a bit more of a thing, but it wasn't a massive thing. But I think the thing I've realised, the things that I was aiming for at 25 weren't worth having.
Yeah.
And actually the things that I've got are much more... Well, I would never have sort of thought, that's what I want to do, but it's much more, you know... You've got much more to be happy with what you're doing.
Yeah.
So that's why I think, like, doing great live shows, if you can translate them to TV, great. And if loads of people love it and they want to see you come do well, great. But if you're also, you know, I think that what you're saying, you're creating. What I love about comedy is that you're creating a memory, and it's not always a good memory.
Yeah.
But you know, you're creating a memory of that night, and then for the live audience, especially, I think it's like, you know, you've got that, especially with these marathon podcasts.
Yeah. We're creating some memories right now.
Yeah, exactly.
We're creating dreams for the people who are currently sleeping. No, I think when people look back on this night, they will. I think when people look back on this night, they'll think there was a lot of early promise, but it just didn't quite translate to a successful second half. No, you're absolutely right. But I think I like I have a brilliant life.
Yeah.
So you can't feel sorry for yourself for a second when things go wrong career wise.
If you are enjoying working with the boys, and you are still getting on with them, you know, I think that's
I think in the most part. Sure. Yeah.
I think there's times where I've gone, I should have not done that thing or not done that thing. You know, looking back, but you learn through doing it. But if you're still having a nice time, then don't, you know, just carry on doing whatever you're doing, and then that stuff might come out of it or it might not. But you're creating, you know, I think some people are always just looking for, oh, well, where will this lead?
No,
a lot of people with this podcast going, oh, so do you want to do it on the telly, or what's the game plan? The game plan is let's do this and see what happens in the night. But it's not, you know, it's palpably not looking for it.
No.
There's no way this could be on
TV. That's what I love about it. But also, you wouldn't, like, the relationship that you have with your podcast listeners is so much more intense than someone who's like, oh, yeah, I think I saw your Mot the Week. That's so ephemeral, isn't it? And people, like, if you absolutely smash it, you know, or you become someone like Frankie or, you know, or Russell, who just leapt out of that show and, you know, got these incredible diehard fans, then maybe, yeah. But most people, you're just like another guy or another girl. Probably more like another guy.
Yeah. And it can just lead to you into a sort of dead end in different ways. So, you know, all those things are interesting. But I think the most, if you're having a nice time and you are making some money doing being on the last leg or whatever you're doing, then you're much luckier than most comedians. Most comedians don't get to be on Rich Hang's Leicester Square Theatre podcast.
That's true.
And admittedly, you were a very late booking.
A very late booking. After you'd already asked, are the rest of Pappy's around? And I said, no. You said, well, are you around? I said, yes. It's like, oh, okay, there we go. It's awful. I got an email today asking for if they could book Showstoppers.
Yeah.
And I then got another very quick email going, I meant Pappy's. But it was all like, we want a really fun musical improv troupe. And I had to then go, I'm sorry, we're not around. But have you asked Showstoppers? Because, I've got a really nice. I'm very happy with the position I am.
Yeah.
I don't get any bother from, you know, people on the streets or audiences or or anyone other than my wife when she hears what I've been saying about her on podcasts.
That was an interesting choice, wasn't it, for that guy to come on at the end of Waiting for Godot?
Yeah, I think actually. Got to end with a callback. I think he was probably, truth be told, having a small mental breakdown that I was part of, and so were the other people in the play.
Yeah.
But also as well, that was like, now I'm a teacher. Like, imagine what the other teachers must have been thinking. He dances on at the end with a sign saying Godot. Wearing those plastic Union Jack bowler hats. Why would you think, like, that's not only are you not understanding the play, that's, put that to one side, but these are young children who are getting their moment to perform two nights of a play in front of their parents. We've rehearsed it. He didn't tell us he was going to do that. These are young people. This is, you know, the first time we get to tread the boards. It's going to lead to two mediumly successful careers. It's, you know, this. Wow, what are you thinking? That's the other thing as well about teaching, is that teachers often forget it's not about you. And that's why I got out of it.
Yeah. I just like the idea of Samuel Beckett sitting in the audience going, ah, oh, yes.
If only I thought of that.
That's what it needed. It was all that build up.
He's giving it to his director. It's still not got an ending. I mean, if you can think of anything, fill your boots, mate. But I don't know what it's going to be.
Oh, look, it's been lovely talking to you.
It's been really good talking to you.
Sorry I was rude to, like, your friend Victoria in the audience.
Hey, it's all right.
She's a bitch.
You absolutely cannot end on that. It's Victoria and Gordon. I met them this weekend. They run the comedy podcast.
Are they new friends of ours?
They are new.
Oh, I love them friends. As well. I was only joking. Yeah. I like their comedy podcast.
They do that comedy podcast.
They're not going to mention me on that comedy podcast.
No, you're off the algorithm forever.
They're very nice. It was a kind of joke.
Oh, that's good. It's good that you qualified. It was a kind of joke.
Kind of joke.
So we're going to go and buy some frozen veg
and
throw it into the sky and pretend it's a kite.
Yeah, why not?
That'll be our night sorted.
It'll be good. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up to the fantastic Matthew Crosby!
Thank you, Matthew.
been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Matthew Crosby. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at Leicester Square Theatre and everyone at Go Faster Strike and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. And why not everyone at iTunes as well? They're nice as well. Thank you to George, the incompetent sound man, who literally took 5 minutes trying to find the sound cards to do this on, and I don't think he's even found them. That's how rubbish he is. Thank you to my producer, Ben Walker. And thank you. This is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe, and the Sky Potato production. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Go to gofasterstripe.com/badges or to richherring.com/gigs. And you can find a way to repay me if you are clever. If not, just tell your friends about the podcast. Why not? It could be fun. You could talk about how funny it was. Go on. It's be good. All right. See you next time. I'm Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Badges. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.